Jack Dorsey said something interesting, that he thinks if Bitcoin is just strictly a store of value, then it's failed.
It'd be an interesting world if you had to pay your membership dues in Bitcoin to the IMF. I kind of see their whole house of cards breaking down, though, under a Bitcoin standard. I don't know if they would survive. They're obviously concerned about Bitcoin. They go to great lengths to try to force countries like El Salvador and Argentina to tamp down or reduce their Bitcoin programs in order to take money from the IMF. So that's, I would say.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Alex Gladstein in the house. But Alex, we've got a lot of craziness going on with Bitcoin and the involvement of governments. But first, I want to start off asking you about the IMF. Have you think the IMF started to flip the script, or do you still think that the IMF is trying to keep the little man down?
I don't think the IMF has materially changed very much across the past 60, 70 years. I think they're running the same playbook. They're obviously concerned about Bitcoin. They go to great lengths to criticize it and to try to force countries like El Salvador and Argentina to tamp down or reduce their Bitcoin programs in order to take money from the IMF. So that's, I would say, telling. I don't think the IMF has changed very much. From its, let's say, more prominent days when people would be more outspoken against it. I just think there's less criticism today, but I mean, if anything, the amount of loans and the amount of influence they have is more than ever.
Now, with that, right, you mentioned El Salvador. You know, they made El Salvador essentially backtrack their Bitcoin for legal tender. But now that the United States is starting to embrace Bitcoin, do you think that that's going to have any type of influence in the way that the IMF, you know, looks at Bitcoin and kind of moves forward with it? Because, you know, the U.S., one of the more powerful, obviously the most powerful nation in the world, you know, will they back down a little bit or start to, regretfully embrace Bitcoin?
I mean, they have their own shitcoin. It's called the SDR. So, you know, I don't think they're going to like governments adopting a new treasury technology. I don't think they're going to like governments adopting a new reserve technology. They like the ability to create SDRs at will. And I just don't see that changing. I mean, I guess in theory, you could look at the founding of the IMF, where membership dues were paid in gold and in dollars. And they cleverly used that to stack a huge war chest of gold. I think they're still the third or fourth largest holder of gold in the world. So I don't know. You know, I think it'd be an interesting world if you had to pay your membership dues in Bitcoin to the IMF. I kind of see their whole house of cards breaking down, though, under a Bitcoin standard. I don't know if they would survive in the same way. I think it's possible that you have a global, you know, globally kind of cooperatively managed sort of bailout fund, which is essentially what the IMF is supposed to be for nation states when they can't do a trade anymore, you know. And, you know, ideally that would be for, like, if there's a natural disaster or something like that happens to a country, it could borrow from the IMF. I mean, this is essentially what it was set up for. It was for real legitimate balance of payments problems that countries would have because of whether it be attacks, war, droughts, whatever. It has turned into something very different, but you never know. I think it could have a second life than a Bitcoin standard, but I feel like its influence would be way smaller, and it would no longer, you know, again, have this shitcoin it can just make at any time.
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit more. So describe, you know, kind of how you've seen the evolution of the IMF, like kind of where you see them at right now, and, you know, where you see that potentially, how that could change under a Bitcoin standard. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, they were founded in the late 40s as part of the Bretton Woods monetary system, as the global lender of last resort for national economies. So you had a lot of war-torn countries at that point, and they were able to borrow from the IMF. I mean, basically every country paid dues to get into the club, which were some mix of gold and dollars. And then at that point, the member states were allowed to draw from it. It started as something quite legitimate again, like, you know, a fund to help countries when they're on tough times, but it ended up turning into a tool of influence in the 60s and 70s, where the IMF and its creditors would make loans to dictators, basically, and basically do deals to exploit natural resources, cheap labor. That's what it's turned into. It's like one of the tools we use out of many to help reduce, devalue currency, and extract cheap inputs for our society. So that's kind of what it does, basically. So there's a lot of fiat games in there, though, that don't really work so well in the Bitcoin standard, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think that the manipulation of the currency is something that's been obviously an attack weapon for the IMF to kind of keep the little man down, so to speak. So how do you see like countries now starting to move towards Bitcoin as part of this, you know, movement towards freedom and maybe getting out of the grasp of the IMF?
Well, it's going to be very hard. I mean, because it's this nice marginal funding that can help a country, right? So they like it. I mean, look at El Salvador. They're taking $1 billion plus right now. So I think entire nations it's going to be hard for them to pry their way out. Dictators seem reasonably okay with taking the money. I mean, basically, in order to take the money from the IMF, you have to do some really nasty things to your country. But they seem okay with that. They can, you know, put down any protests, etc. It's going to be tough. It's almost like the debt is like a drug, and you know the patient doesn't want to go to rehab, and the drug dealer wants to sell more. So there's not really a way out there. I think individuals and communities and businesses can start escaping the system, and they can start building Bitcoin native, you know, personal and community and corporate banks and banking, and they can get out of this system. But I think it's a while before countries, you know, fully get out of it.
Self-custody can be a daunting task. That's why I've partnered with Bitbox. They have the best hardware wallet. They make it the easiest to put Bitcoin in self-custody. So go to bitbox.swiss/greencandle today and use promo code greencandle and you can get 5% off your entire order. They make it so easy, all in one. You could get the hardware wallet, you could get their punch plates, you could do it all right there on that website to make the self-custody experience the easiest it can be. So visit bitbox.swiss/greencandle. Use promo code GreenCandle, get 5% off your entire order, and get your Bitcoin off an exchange into self-custody today. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. Now, the El Salvador experiment has kind of been an interesting one, right? We've seen them seemingly revert back. Now, do you think that that's going to make it harder for other countries to try to embrace Bitcoin simply just because of, you know, the things that you're lining out here?
Well, they're certainly trying to make an example out of El Salvador and trying to force El Salvador to walk back its Bitcoin programs, and they've been successful. So yeah, I think there's like probably, you know, a pretty decent gap in between El Salvador and another country that would come out as brazenly about Bitcoin. I think you see a lot more like treasury and mining adoption of Bitcoin, which is what you're seeing right now.
Yeah. So do you think we'll get to that legal tender type of status then anytime soon? Or, is it just mostly going to be the treasury and mining? Like, is there a path forward where we can, truly remove money from state?
I mean, Bitcoin is money that the state doesn't control. It's just a question of how many people use it and who uses it and who accepts it, right? Virtually all the world still uses fiat currency. They're not aware of the Bitcoin thing. I mean, Bitcoin's growing like at a crazy rate every day, but it's like, still a fiat world, right? So I think that's going to take some time for sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I think that there's going to be, a path forward here, but I kind of see, I guess two paths, maybe some resistance here, where, you kind of have that gradual grassroots movement and we start to, see the little micro communities pop up, maybe the Bitcoin Beach, Bitcoin jungles of the world, maybe some cities here or there, make it legal tender. And then before you know it, you kind of get more mass adoption. And it's more of a gradual, play into more of a Bitcoin standard. And then on the flip side of things, you get the current system right now where we have massive amounts of inflation, and then there's seemingly blood in the streets. And when we get to that, gradually instance, it might not just be where everybody who has Bitcoin is, seemingly A-okay. It's just, it'll take some time to rebuild that world back to where we are today. Now, how do you kind of see these two things playing out? Do you think that it is one of these two paths, or do you feel that, maybe we get to a Bitcoin standard, some other way?
I think it's just going to take a very long time, and it's not until merchants demand Bitcoin that you really have a Bitcoin standard. I mean, if a lot of countries and companies and families and households own Bitcoin, but they still pay taxes in fiat and they buy things in their daily life in fiat, that's still a fiat world, right? It's a question of when you go to pay and buy something, both at the international trade level and at the personal level. Are you paying in Bitcoin or are you paying in dollars? So I think this could be many decades.
Yeah. So as part of like the freedom movement and kind of getting away from, the overlords that be, including the IMF, how vital is the money aspect in all of this? Is it just a small cog, or is it, as simple as like the Bitcoin community really says, like, fix the money, fix the world?
I mean, that's a mantra that's helpful to think about as an aspirational goal. It's obviously not true. The world will not be perfect, even if we use Bitcoin as a money. I think it's just a better money. There's less exploitation. There's more cooperation. There's more unity. There's less division. But I mean, humans are complicated beasts. Come on. We all knew this.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I mean, like, with Bitcoin kind of being that, that Trojan horse, so to speak, towards freedom, how do you see it kind of, weaseling its way in? Is it just still that grassroots movement kind of continuing to go forward and, getting all that? Is that the best route for us Bitcoiners to kind of help do it? Is, whether it's through something like Noster or Zaps or like paying for things in Bitcoin, is that the best way to kind of, fully get everybody on board, or is there, more things that we could be doing?
I think that we should just think of it like brick by brick, do what you can, either through your business or your time off or through, something that interests you. Get involved in the movement. It could be as small as helping a local business learn how to use it. It could be teaching family or friends. I mean, it could be volunteering at a school. I mean, it could be donating some Bitcoin to a cause. There's this huge constellation now of Bitcoin organizations around the world working to Bitcoinize their region. It could be going to an event. I mean, I would really encourage people to go check out the Indonesia Bitcoin Conference or the Africa Bitcoin Conference or SatsConf in Brazil. You know, get out into the world. If you're technically inclined, to go check out the BTC++ conferences. They're amazing. So, you know, you could do something. I think you want to do something. And then, you know, continue to escape the system by continuing to convert fiat into Bitcoin. I mean, these are the easiest way to participate. It's a peaceful protest and it's a peaceful revolution, and it's going to happen gradually. And then one day it'll be suddenly, but you know, the gradual period of time is I think pretty elongated.
Now, do you think that the gradual time is getting accelerated with the current, you know, United States administration starting to embrace Bitcoin, even though they're kind of dipping their toe into the crypto? And is that something that worries you when you see, you know, obviously the IMF trying to create their own cryptocurrency, the EU trying to create the digital euro, and then who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of years with the Trump administration? Obviously, they've done the meme coins and everything like that. But is there some part of you that kind of worries that, you know, we have Bitcoin, but, you know, it could be, you know, I guess, convoluted with the illusion of these shit coins?
I mean, it's all just a game of confusing people. So some people want to confuse people into thinking that CBDCs are a good savings technology. That's not going so well. What's much more effective is shitcoining. So like, people want to say, oh, buy my new Bitcoin or buy the next Bitcoin or do this or do that. You're going to outperform Bitcoin or whatever. They're all just trying to get you to give them your Bitcoin so they can dump this token on you of some kind. That's very successful. It happens all the time. In fact, you know, most people are, my guess is that the average American who's involved in cryptocurrency generally, like, has a bunch of shit coins, you know, in their Coinbase account or whatever, just sitting there going to zero, you know? So education is the key. It's really the only way to make this work. Got to teach people about Bitcoin.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000, and they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage, and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin, and that's self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough for me, back to the show. Now, do you think it's, I guess, more so of the current education of people just around money, where they simply just don't understand it, where, you know, that's, you know, they're sold this dream, right? Get rich quick. And that's kind of why we've seen the rise of gambling and other kinds of, you know, means to, you know, hit this parlay. And then all of a sudden you're going to be, you know, this one guy on DraftKings or whatever it is, goes from $2 to, you know, 200,000 or something crazy. And, you know, you hear these stories, and that's what kind of people are sold, opposed to Bitcoin. Because, I mean, I was just recently having a conversation with somebody, and they're like, what do you think of this shit coin? What do you think of that? You know, Bitcoin's at 95,000. I missed the boat. It's too late. You know, why do you think that there's such that wide gap with the education? And, you know, I guess not only in the United States, but globally.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has to do with just money's not taught in schools. What is money? How does it work? And even if it were taught, it would be probably taught by a bunch of chartalists who believe that government makes money. So, you know, to be fair, there's just a widespread debate, even among Bitcoiners, of course, on what is money? How does it work? Like, there's just a cacophony of different voices. I think groups like Me Premier Bitcoin are doing an awesome job putting out open source educational guides for kids of high school age to learn. We could use a lot more of that. That should be in schools. Every high schooler should take Me Premier Bitcoin at least. And if even if they don't agree with some of it, I mean, that's the freaking point of school, is to read stuff that you may not necessarily agree with, but it certainly couldn't hurt. Get kids into Bitcoin early, however you can. Some of the gaming stuff, obviously helpful there. CBD, Thunder Games, etc. I mean, there's other actors in the space, but you know, getting young people involved in Bitcoin is a noble goal, I would say. I think it's the only way it's going to actually change the future.
Is just getting involved and kind of doing that education. Is that what you mean?
No, I mean, I think that if we're really going to have an impact, like Gen Z and younger people need to learn about Bitcoin now, not in 10 years. Like, so how do you get them interested? Well, you know, games is one thing, but, you know, approachable materials another.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like there is somewhat of a movement with that, you know, that I've noticed in the startup realm. But, you know, what else do you think is, like, missing here? Like, you know, with the transactional stuff, right? Paying with Lightning. Lightning is not perfect. Like, do you think that we're ready to get towards a full Bitcoin standard just yet? Or do you think, you know, as we're gradually, you know, kind of converting over, that gradual period actually is somewhat helpful for us to develop out all these tools, the education, all that kind of stuff to kind of get us moving forward?
Yeah, so I think that Bitcoin adapts as more people come into it. It's like it reacts. So I think Bitcoin's scaling problem right now is the fact that not enough people use it. Let's see what 100 million more weekly on-chain users does to Bitcoin. All right, let's see that. You know, maybe we get more fees. Maybe we get a little tighter. This was sort of happening. You know, it was funny. It was when the ordinal stuff happened. You know, it was like people were like freaking out over the fees, how expensive it was. And now fees are obviously like nothing now. So it was just kind of funny. So we got a little like glimpse of that world, but I think clearly we're not anywhere close to where we could be within the confines of Bitcoin as it exists today. Could easily accommodate tens of millions of more users who are occasional on-chain users. So I think that's the biggest scaling problem is education and just getting more people in.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. Now, why do you think that, I guess with the IMF and everything, you know, kind of back to the earlier part of the conversation, why do you think that they're, I guess, getting looser when it comes to the Bitcoin mining side of things? Because, you know, originally, especially in the United States and in a lot of other, you know, Western governments, they were saying, you know, the energy usage was just astronomical, and that they were kind of, you know, using that FUD to fight Bitcoin, you know, 7-8 years ago. And it seems like now that's kind of flipped the script. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think you have a general march of Bitcoin adoption, right? Like, and the market dictates what actors think, right? So currently we're in I'm not sure I'd call it a Bitcoin bull market, but close. I mean, Bitcoin's at like 94K right now. I mean, that's pretty bullish. Like, it's doing well, especially given the macro environment. You know, stocks are still way off their highs. A whole lot of the altcoins are like dead. They're like barely above their 2017 cycle high. Forget the 2021 cycle. You know, I think the separation between Bitcoin and the rest of crypto has never been more apparent. I don't know if it'll always be like this. Obviously, you know, there was a little bit of this at the beginning of the last cycle too, and then altcoins had this like nuts bull run. I don't know if you get the same thing again. We'll see. But right now it's like pretty clear that there's a difference. So, I mean, hopefully that then colors the market and colors decision makers and et cetera. So I think now's a really good time to be talking about Bitcoin.
Yeah, they've been talking about the decoupling, but it seems like Bitcoin follows the M2 money supply pretty closely, at least right now. Do you see us, with this macro environment and kind of, I guess, the low overhead that it takes to actually make a crypto token? You know, there's Brian Armstrong came out and said that there's probably a million a day that are being
shielded. I mean, that's the thing, though. They're going to all turn into penny stocks, and like, you can't prevent them from being created. But I mean, you know, the average investor is usually savvy enough to like not buy penny stocks. So it turns into like a niche behavior. So I'm sure in the future there'll be like collectors of these random coins, but like, I mean, it's a dangerous game, you know? So we'll see. I mean, I think Bitcoin is going to be just like the standard, and then like, you know, if people want to get more radical, they can, but it's dangerous, super dangerous. Look at all these NFTs. This is basically all went to zero. It's crazy. So, or at least they're like way before, like below the floor price or whatever they were issued at. So anyway, I think it's just been a dangerous game. People should just stay humble and stack sats, basically.
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I'm so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you, and bring in that hot lady friend. We had Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the Black Tie event or Black Tie event plus Bitcoin Day. You'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GreenCandle for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough of me. Back to the show. Good. Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. And I think that's where, you know, we're going to start to move to, right? But, with the crypto craze that we've seen, it seems like a lot of them still have a decent amount of money to be throwing around and kind of have that political influence. Now, is that something that worries you here, at least in the short term, where we're seeing, the likes of some big players like the CEO of XRP coming into the Trump administration or other things like that?
Yeah, obviously it's concerning. I mean, the son of the president was pumping Ethereum 2 months ago. Anyone who listened to him has lost half their money. So it's terrible. Trump coin. I mean, is this legal? I don't really know what's going on. Like, apparently the president has a coin and he's like using official channels to pump it and then take profit. So I don't know. I don't know what the books are on that. It doesn't look great. So, I think it's a crypto presidency so far. I mean, there's been no, I mean, they have Bitcoin that the last administration confiscated that we think they haven't sold. I mean, we have no idea because they're not doing an audit. Which seems weird because they could just be like, yeah, here's the address. I mean, you know what I mean? It's like they're not being very open about it. They've made some good, so there's been some good strides, right? There's been some, obviously freeing Ross was amazing. And there have been some legal things that seem promising in terms of walking back some of the sort of assault on digital assets that the Biden administration had. Where some, especially on the privacy side, but I mean, we'll see. I mean, look, they aren't really doing a whole lot with the strategic Bitcoin reserve idea. I mean, there's not a whole lot going on there, at least at the moment. And they're doing a lot of crypto stuff. I mean, they're basically, it looks like they're trying to just make it like a wild west for crypto. Like anybody can do anything, you know? And that seems to be like their main point of energy right now. I mean, it'd be great if they could focus on like protecting actual people building good tools, I'd like to see them intervene and get, you know, come to a resolution and drop charges or something against the developers for the Samurai and the Tornado Cash cases. Like, that would be helpful. But we'll see. I mean, right now it's a mixed picture.
Yeah, so it definitely seems like it is kind of becoming the Wild West, and it's just, you know, everything's moving so quickly, and it doesn't seem like there's a clear direction that we can kind of point to and say, hey, this is going to be a good or a bad, at least in the short term. But, you know, walking all of this, I guess, kind of back on some of the policies that they've changed. Now, they're allowing the banks, that was released today, that, you know, they're talking about the banks can essentially don't need FDIC clearance to hold Bitcoin and crypto and other things for their clients. Now, there's a lot of big players getting involved with Bitcoin. So, is your feeling on, like, the guys with BlackRock, like the Coinbases of the world, and all of these guys kind of trying to get in on Bitcoin and, you know, essentially saying, like, hey, well, we're almost going to make it, I guess, like fiat 2.0, where they're, you know, the custodians of your Bitcoin instead of people actually taking self-custody?
I mean, look, again, that's an education piece. Like, people should understand, buy Bitcoin, don't buy a stock or a SPAC or whatever. Like, I mean, I guess there's certain capital markets that need those things, and that's fine. Like, some people like can only get IBIT. I get it. But I think that it's on us to educate people to make sure that they understand how to be their own bank. And then on top of that, if they want to get leverage on MSTR or whatever, okay. Like, that should be seen as a leverage play, right? As essentially as gambling or speculating. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, like, I think it's unequivocally good that these organizations are, like, being forced into Bitcoin, pulled into Bitcoin. Great. It's what Bitcoin's doing. It's a Trojan horse for freedom. It's bringing in all these institutions, and it's going to change their behavior. And it makes them advocates for Bitcoin. I mean, if you notice, they're not all of these derivatives salespeople who are selling, like, a something on top of Bitcoin, like a whether it be a stock or an ETF or whatever, something that is not Bitcoin but is connected to Bitcoin. They're always talking about Bitcoin. They're not talking about, like, you know, like, so it's good. It's like building a huge army of people promoting Bitcoin. I think it's great.
So, yeah, then do you think, like, although, you know, you shouldn't be buying the ETFs, you should hold in self-custody and, you know, you should use Bitcoin to transact, that because they're talking about Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin is the true and ultimate Trojan horse, and we'll get to a point where, you know, everybody will look into Bitcoin enough because they own either the IBIT or something along those lines, like a similar product. And then they, you know, just hear about it so much, they learn about it. And then that's when we get to the full education piece. So is that kind of what you mean by that Trojan horse?
Yeah, meaning, like, they don't have to have, like, altruistic intentions at heart. Like, they're just trying to make money. But by, like, aping into Bitcoin and aping into the Bitcoin ecosystem, they are strengthening Bitcoin, making it more valuable, making it more well-known, bringing more creative and smart people into the Bitcoin space. There's more jobs in Bitcoin. There's more assets in Bitcoin. It just grows. It grows and it grows and it grows. So, you know, they don't know that they're accomplices, you know, to Bitcoin and to freedom. They just think they're going to get rich or whatever. So it's quite beautiful.
Yeah, because it seems like, well, maybe in the short term, they'll be pumping everybody's bags. But in the long term, you know, we'll probably see something like the grayscale where everybody starts
out and. It's hard. You have all these big announcements and, like, you know, the price doesn't really do anything. Like, it's, I think people are, you know, like, to really move Bitcoin requires an absolutely enormous amount of buying, like a crazy, crazy amount, relentless.
But I mean, with that, right, we're seeing governments, we're seeing now companies coming in. I mean, Jack Mahler just announced 21 the other day, which is seemingly strictly just a buy and hold on Bitcoin, almost like a leverage play, kind of like you were describing with MSTR. on Bitcoin here going forward. And then we're going to see, you know, more companies put Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And, you know, obviously we've got the ETFs. Like, it seems like the simple supply and demand here has to make for the price to explode, unless, you know, we've got all of these, I guess, products and they're potentially selling paper Bitcoin, and then we're going to have an FTX 2.0. So is that something that you think, I guess, could be potentially detrimental here going forward? Because, like, you know, the current administration is almost allowing it to be the Wild West, where it's kind of leaving.
I mean, detrimental for whom? I mean, like, it's not detrimental for Bitcoin, the network, at all. On the opposite, it's helping Bitcoin grow and bring more people into it. It will be detrimental for people who buy those things thinking that they're buying Bitcoin and they're not, they don't have any Bitcoin, and then something happens. That's who it's detrimental for, but it's not detrimental for Bitcoin. I mean, it's good for Bitcoin that more people adopt Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin's for people you don't like. It's money for enemies. Like, Bitcoin would be a failure if nobody was adopting it, nobody was talking about it, nobody was using it. That's not what's happening right now. Like, a lot of people are talking about Bitcoin. A lot of people are buying Bitcoin. A lot of people are using Bitcoin. A lot of people are, you know, trying to use Bitcoin for their own aims. Fine. That's the plan. It's trying to co-opt you to use it. And then the very act of you using it strengthens it. So, like, you don't have a choice.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign. Yeah, I agree. And Jack Dorsey said something interesting, that he thinks if Bitcoin is just strictly a store of value, then it's failed. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wouldn't say, I think you'd have a partial failure. I think Bitcoin is a great savings technology. It's an upgrade over what's out there now. Having an open, neutral, permissionless, high-performing savings asset that anybody in the world can get without paperwork is amazing. But I think, you know, I think these things are tied together. I think, like, part of Bitcoin's value as a savings instrument is the fact that it's seizure resistant and confiscation resistant and neutral and borderless and permissionless and digital and teleporting and programmable and all these things. So it's like, yeah, there's, like, reasons why it's so valuable as a savings instrument, and they tie back to the fact that it's basically this decentralized open source money for the internet. The two things are connected, and it's a much bigger win for us if we get full hyper Bitcoinization in terms of pricing things in Bitcoin, and you know, daily small exchanges are in Bitcoin, denominated in Bitcoin at least. I think that would be the big win. If it's just like this thing that we're pricing in dollars, you know, I don't think that's a full victory by any means. I mean, look, we're still living in the dollar world today. We chart Bitcoin's success in dollar terms, or at least a lot of people do. And it's been hugely helpful for people. Hugely helpful. It's been the best performing asset in dollar terms since it was created, right? So, but it's not a full victory. I mean, a full victory is we get rid of fiat money. So, I don't know. We'll see.
How is the development going, you know, globally when it comes to the medium of exchange? Obviously, we touched on it a little bit briefly with El Salvador kind of rescinding the legal tender aspect of it, or at least forcing businesses to accept Bitcoin. But, you know, how do you see it developing, like, just globally in general?
Yeah, I think that's bullish. I mean, we've got a bunch of different countries now where you can live on Bitcoin and pay merchants, and the merchants gets local currency. They don't have to know about Bitcoin. I think those bridge apps are incredible. The one in Kenya is called Tondo. There's similar ones in Brazil, Ghana, South Africa, a few other countries. And then there's also like some services like Bull Bitcoin do a similar thing. Costa Rica has one where they basically act as a bridge between currency and at the fiat currency and Bitcoin. Yeah.
Strike does a great job with that as well. You know, sending people dollars or whatever currency you'd like globally. So I think like that kind of that remittance aspect, or even like paying, utilizing the Lightning Network and kind of moving forward with that is outstanding. And I think that development is going to continue on and growing. But, you know, as you mentioned, a few countries in Africa, Costa Rica, some of these other, you know, projects that are going on now, it seems like the Latin America and like Africa are kind of the two most ripe regions for, you know, systems to be flipped on their head. Is that where you're seeing the most amount of, grassroots movements, people embracing Bitcoin for transactions?
You know, I'd say the biggest global, I mean, one of the bigger marketplaces for Bitcoin transactions is Nostr, which is global, which is super powerful. You know, I see a lot of activity there. I mean, you know, it's just hard to chart, but I do think that Bitcoin just makes more sense of a medium exchange. Yeah, outside of America. I mean, with people who have less developed financial systems and capital markets. Yeah.
Yeah. So you do a lot of great work at the HRF, the Human Rights Foundation, and you guys have a lot of great things going on now with the progress and some of the things that you guys are doing. What is something that you're super excited about here going forward that you guys are working on, or, you know, maybe some developments that you guys have helped do like in the past year or so?
Sure. Yeah. Well, we have like webinars that help people learn about how to integrate Bitcoin into their work as you know, running nonprofits or social movements. Those are quarterly and they're free, and they're taught by BTC Sessions, as well as my amazing colleague, Anna Chekovich. Those are powerful. So the next one's going to be, I think, in July. We're running events. We have the Oslo Freedom Forum coming up in Norway. That's going to be great. We have a big Bitcoin track there. We have a lot of awesome Bitcoiners there. The grant program is rolling along. We're doing about $1 million of Bitcoin every quarter to about 20, 25 groups around the world who are all helping to Bitcoinize, you know, their region. And then we have a great newsletter that anyone can check out at financialfreedomreport.org. I would definitely recommend you sign up. It hits every Thursday. And it's pretty good stuff. It's like an overview of, you know, financial repression and also how people are using Bitcoin to fight back.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, tell us a little bit about the Oslo Freedom Forum in Norway, man. What kind of things do you like to do out in Norway when you're out there? And dive into a little bit about that, because I know it's not just all about Bitcoin, but you guys have a lot of great tracks there as well.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a conference to give dissidents fighting dictators a platform to talk about what they're doing, sharing tactics, stories, testimonies, personal experiences. And it's a connection point where they can learn from people who want to help them. Those might be philanthropists or policymakers or artists or students or strategists or mentors or doctors or therapists or psychologists or God knows what. I mean, there's so many different kinds of people that can help. So obviously in our case, the technologist part is really big, but yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful place for people from different backgrounds, walks of life to come together to help, help learn about the struggle for freedom and see how they can get involved. And it's like a big festival runs for 3 days. It's awesome.
That's great. Well, what's one story that really stands out from you, if you can pick just one?
Probably. I mean, one of my friends is Yunmi Park. She's a North Korean defector who escaped North Korea, and a harrowing story that she told in her book, In Order to Live. It's amazing. And she came, she spoke at the Oslo Freedom Forum, and then from there got connected to a bunch of people, ended up, getting a Hollywood kind of a movie deal, getting a lot of connections. So you've had a lot of activists come to the event and be able to use it to reach a bigger audience. Some people have won Nobel Peace Prizes. Other people have, again, gone on to write books or movies have their stuff funded. So, yeah, we think of it like a supercharger for people doing good work.
That's awesome stuff. Well, Alex, you've been very generous with your time. Why don't you tell people where they could find out more about you and more about HRF?
Sure. Definitely check out Noster. I'm on there. Gladstein at primal.net. You can find me. My NPub is in my X profile at Gladstein. You can find me there. Check out hrf.org. Check out our initiatives on Bitcoin. We're launching a new AI program. That's going to be fun. So thank you. And appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll put all that in the show notes. You guys should definitely check it out. And thanks for all the great work you do as well.
Appreciate you. Keep going.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.